Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
You are listening to The Medical Podcast, a podcast publication, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. The Medical Podcast is dedicated to pharmacists, healthcare professionals, and is devoted to delivering accurate, timely, cutting-edge information about medical marijuana. We will bring you the most up-to-date scientific, political, regulatory, financial, and interesting information not available on any other podcast program. Not since Silicon Valley and the technology boom have we seen the likes of any other industry that has grown this fast over a relatively short period of time. The medical marijuana industry is projected to hit the $30 billion mark in the next 5 years. The medical cannabis industry has the potential of helping billions of people around the globe, but at a significant social, economical, and political cost. Our goal is to answer some of your questions, plus heighten, enlighten, confuse, and frustrate you all at the same time. So fasten your seatbelts, keep your eyes on the road, and get ready for some fun. And now, here's your host, registered pharmacist, life student, and medical cannabis professional, Joseph Friedman.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation. This is the host of the Pharmacy Podcast Network and founder, Todd Urey. I'm so excited about today's conversation. It's 2020. It's a new decade. Things are changing in the healthcare marketplace. And even more so, closer to our hearts, is the world of pharmacy and how much flux, how much change in pharmacy there is. One aspect of being a pharmacist that you are exposed to in the community space is customers coming to you, clients, patients coming to you, asking questions about CBD oil and hemp and medical cannabis and marijuana and that, how that ties into the care that's being provided to them via the physician and pharmacist teams. The Pharmacy Podcast Network joined forces with Joe Friedman, who's a pharmacist out of the great state of Illinois. And Joe has a pedigree, a long background in pharmacy as well as medical cannabis. And I just want to point out that through a Pew research done in November of 2019, it said that two-thirds of Americans say that the use of marijuana should be legal, reflecting a steady increase over the past decade. And another 52% in 2010 was a 32% increase in saying that they, in fact, were pro-marijuana use. Joe and I have obviously different viewpoints on recreational versus marijuana and cannabis being in the hands of a medical professional, a physician and pharmacist team. And I'm going to bring things to Joe to really take over. We have a special guest today that we're so excited that's here with us on this discussion about cannabis in the next decade. And welcome to the new decade, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks for the great introduction. And I'm pleased. And this is Joseph Friedman, medical cannabis pharmacist. And we can sort of get into a lot of that. But I do want to introduce Carla Lowe. Carla Lowe hails from California. She's the mother of 5 grown children, a grandmother, and a graduate of UC Berkeley and former high school teacher. She has been a volunteer and anti-drug activist since 1977 and has had quite a colorful career founding and co-founding groups that are drug-free youth and, you know, chaired the Nancy Reagan Speakers Bureau of the National Federation of Parents for Drug-Free Youth. This goes on. She has traveled 400,000 miles in the U.S. and around the world speaking about marijuana's impact on young people and society. And as a volunteer consultant for the U.S. State Department and Department of Education, she has addressed parents, students, community groups, and heads of in Brazil, Uruguay, Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, Pakistan, Germany, Italy, Ireland, and Australia. She's testified before congressional and state committees and has successfully sponsored as a citizen legislator in Sacramento a number of anti-drug laws, including a ban on drug paraphernalia shops. So with all that said, and then one last thing, in 2016, Proposition 64 became California law, and the state now having both medical, 1996, and recreational cannabis. As other states passed similar laws and citizens across the country began fighting back against legalization and commercialization of marijuana, it was necessary to put together a group that is now called Americans Against Legalizing Marijuana, that reflects the expanding national education efforts that Carla is behind. So with all that said, Carla, welcome aboard.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you today. But our mission statement, which is really important for your people to hear, is because I rest my case on this statement, and this is that we support the premise of no unlawful use of any legal drug and no use of any illegal drug and no illegal use of a legal drug. So that sets my whole discussion today clearly resting on the law and the law currently regarding marijuana, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, is that marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance, illegal under federal law. My daughter's a doctor. We have excellent near friends almost in our family who are pharmacists. I've always respected the pharmaceutical community. Actually, they were the first group of people in all my legislative work I turned to who supported the bills that I sponsored, as you mentioned, as a citizen legislator. So I rest my case on the law, and you will hear my comments through our discussion today based on the law.
That's fantastic, Carla. Thanks for that additional information. So I became aware of Americans Against Marijuana Legalization and Carla through a presentation I was giving locally here in Illinois, to a senior living facility. And there was about 60 seniors in the audience. I gave a presentation. One senior raised her hand and asked the question, I heard that, you know, marijuana wreaks havoc on the immune system. Can you comment about that? And at the time, I wasn't really familiar with the fact that marijuana wreaks havoc on the immune system. But I said to the nice lady, I said, you know, why don't you approach me after the presentation and show me what information you have? And after the presentation, she handed me Carla's brochure. And the brochure starts off with marijuana, man-made disaster. And there's a number of other points on this brochure. And this is going to be the essence of our discussion of all the points that are on this brochure. And Carla, if you're okay with that, we can go ahead and get started.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so let's talk about the first item there, gateway to other drugs. According to the brochure, marijuana, a powerful neurotransmitter, works on the same receptor system in the brain as heroin. It primes the brain to seek stronger drugs. Marijuana users are more likely than non-users to use heroin and abuse pharmaceutical opioids. So with that said, there is just recently National Geographic has their January 24th, 2020 issue. It's called Marijuana Medicine, the Science of Unlocking the Secrets of Cannabis. And there is a part in there that talks about, you know, is marijuana a gateway drug? And, it's called a gateway drug, a drug whose use supposedly leads one on a path toward harder and harder drugs. And that concept has some merit. You know, the average user of hard drugs tried marijuana first, but there's a catch. They usually tried alcohol and tobacco before trying marijuana. And given that marijuana itself is not particularly addictive, any gateway drug effect that marijuana may have needs to be considered in a broader context. Indeed, opponents, and again, to back to your article or your brochure, Carla, of the gateway drug theory, believe that people try marijuana before hard drugs because it's cheap and accessible, not because marijuana itself is so addictive that it compels users to try more extreme drugs. They argue that the relation between marijuana use and addiction to hard drugs is one of correlation and not causation. And not everyone that uses marijuana or cannabis goes on to harder drugs. So, Carla, what do you have to say about that?
That's a really good starting point. We're really talking about THC when we're talking about marijuana today. And I think it's important for pharmacists, I would assume they already know that the THC, marijuana, cannabis, pot, whatever we call it, is 10 to 40 times stronger than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago when I first started, when the THC, and that's tetrahydrocannabinol, and that's the chemical in this very complex cannabis sativa about which we're speaking today. The THC is what gets people high. That's how you buy your weed, based on the cottonseed, the potency. When I was traveling around the world, as you mentioned when you were introducing me, I was traveling for the U.S. State Department, and at every stop along the way, I was taken to rehab centers, to prisons, to different environments where prisoners, or if they weren't a prisoner, yeah, they were prisoners, they were, or people in rehab or who had been incarcerated. I kept a diary of my travels over those years, and without exception, and I guess you never can say 100%, but in my travels and in my conversations, most of the time through an interpreter, every single person, who man or woman, who was in care or rehab for heroin or, quote, hard drugs, without exception, they had started on weed, ganja, whatever you want to call it. So it was marijuana. And those were 40 years ago, again, when the marijuana, at least in the U.S., was 2, 3, 4, 5% THC. Today, there is no street pot, 2, 3, 4, 5%. Even though I might add right now that the federal joint, the research that's being done by my friend Dr. Alsoli at the University of Mississippi, the research joint is still 2% THC. There is no 2% weed on the streets of Sacramento. And that's talking about what you smoke. That's not mentioning the edibles. And then we talk about the liquids and the solids. And that can be somewhere between 50, 60, 70, 80, as high as 95% pure THC. Marijuana is classified as a hallucinogenic drug. It's long-acting, and that's because of the staying power of the THC. It's a fat-soluble substance, unlike virtually all of the other drugs that we take. Being fat-soluble, that means that the active ingredient stays alive and well, active in the system for a period of time. Alcohol, all of the miracle drugs that we take, penicillin, et cetera, they're water soluble and they have a half-life, 2 nanogram half-life, 2, 4, 6, 10, maybe 12 hours. That's why the bottle says dosing, take one every 12 hours. THC stays active as long as 5 to 7 days in the system. So we all smoked a joint at a party, a New Year's party last night or two nights ago, and we don't smoke any weed for another week. We have roughly 50% of the THC still in our system, and it's accumulating, and that's the problem. It's long-acting, it has a staying power, and unlike you who said it's not addicting, I beg to differ with you. I understand, remember, I'm not a researcher. I've read a lot, I've studied a lot, I've traveled a lot. I know this issue pretty well. For 43 years, it's considered an addicting drug.
Okay, well that's...
It is a gateway drug. Okay. Nobody denies that it's a gateway drug.
Okay, well, I think we'll differ on that, Carla, but respectfully differ on that. You know,
okay.
You know, one of the things that I'm aware of is, you know, the SAM organization and Kevin Sabat. And
yes, he's a good friend of mine.
Oh, okay, excellent. Well, there's an article here, you know, debunking the 5 biggest lies of Kevin Sabat that I've got in front of me. And one of the claims is today's pot is much stronger than it used to be. And You know, and Sabat does make the point, but, you know, aside from the fact that Sabat varies his figures based on which media outlet he is communicating to, it is patently false to claim that marijuana, cannabis, and the forms it was ingested in were somehow so different 50 years ago. Cannabis resin produced by its flowers has always been concentrated in solutions that were consumed orally. So it's false to claim that cannabis available today is somehow so different than what it was in the past. You know, sure, there's higher potencies available, but it's due to the pressures produced by prohibition and the lack of legal regulation.
No, I disagree with you.
Okay. Well, let's just go on to the next question or the next statement in your brochure. And again, I agree that that cannabis can be addictive. There's a 9% incidence of addiction, but that addiction is you know the withdrawal from something like that is a lot less than say the withdrawal from opioids. You know, caffeine, alcohol, and opioids are much more addictive than that. So the next point is marijuana and the
brain. Okay, we're going to agree to disagree on that point.
Okay, sounds good.
Before we move forward, Carla and Joe, I have a comment and a basic opinion that comes from a consumer and a client and a business guy who's been in the pharmacy industry for some time and me as well as Carla. I'm not a researcher, however. The theme of what is addiction, I was in the addiction industry for about 3.5 years, focused on opioids, and there was physicians that I learned from and listening to them in order to present information and analytics to politicians when we were attempting to get funding for addiction recovery therapies. And something that I learned through listening to what they were saying was, There's two sides of addiction, and there's a chemical addiction or something that's biological that they can look at scans of the brain and show that in fact a substance has in fact changed the brain, and therein lies the attachment to the word addiction and becoming something that the patient or the individual is dealing with. Then the other side, there's habitual addiction. This is classified with things like sugar, too much exercise, pornography, things that have become addictive from a habitual perspective. And one of the physicians that we're talking mentioned that marijuana fit into the habitual side of addiction versus like an opioid that was much more chemical changing, literally changing the brain and how the brain responded to the substance. Can you talk to that, Joe? And then I also want to hear from Carla on that as well.
Sure. Good point. And and I look at that point from the perspective that I have worked with opioid patients that are going through withdrawal, and you know they are in bed, you know, 1, 2, 3 days or more when they try to get off of benzodiazepines or opioids. And you know, I know people that, you know, for maybe they want to get a job and they want to get the cannabis out of their system, so they abruptly stop. There's some feeling of not feeling great, but it usually doesn't put them in the bed. And so, you know, the withdrawal aspect is much less, and you can just go ahead and go cold turkey and stop, and it really won't be an issue. Now, that's for the usual cannabis user. Now, if you got someone that's using 1,000 milligrams a day, that could be a different story.
First of all, let me respond. I am not a specialist in addiction. I have at least 6 colleagues whose names I can give you who would be marvelous on a follow-up podcast looking specifically at addiction. What we're concerned about is the impact of THC, this highly potent THC today, on our kids' developing brains and the mental problems, the psychotic breaks that we're seeing, the ER doctors who are part of our team, their stories coming out of particularly Colorado, we've been following. You need to talk to parents who've lost children who've said they simply couldn't give up the weed. So I'm not going to debate the addiction issue because I'm not a specialist, but I think that's a topic for another conversation. But I think it's extremely important if we could talk about the impact of THC on our kids' developing brains and the problems we're seeing, the impact. I think you're going to go right back to our flyer, which by the way, we can make available to anybody who would like this flyer you've been mentioning, Marijuana Man-Made Disaster. Every statement in it is documented. The sites are all listed and they've never been questioned. That's just an aside. But again, coming back to our reason for being here is to educate the public. We think they're very poorly informed. We don't have media that tells our side of the story. Alex Berenson has become a new popular speaker. You may know of his name. He has been out speaking about the impact of marijuana and mental health. So if we could talk a little bit about some of the other impacts of marijuana, I would like that rather than addiction because, again, I'm not a specialist there.
Okay, very good. Well, you know, I agree that we want to keep, you know, cannabis out of the hands of youth. You know, I think it's probably not a good idea for anyone who's young to be a chronic user of cannabis. And, you know, we can definitely agree on that part. Now, what age would be a good idea? You know, probably postgraduate college, but at the same time, over 21 is the legal limit for recreational in most states, and that's
except under federal law, and I need to just keep reminding your listeners, it's illegal under federal law, whether you call it medical pot or recreational pot. A rose is a rose is a rose. It's all the same. I live in Sacramento in California, where the voters determined medicine to be the marijuana to be a medicine in 1996. The 80%, 65-70% of the marijuana that's grown in California goes elsewhere in the country. We are a cartel. This whole thing has not changed much since we've had, quote, recreational marijuana. Medical marijuana is just a foot in the door. As my friend Keith Stroop, my friend only because I heard him speak, he said way back in 1977 at Emory University, in our quest to see marijuana legalized nationally, we first have to get it accepted as a medicine. And his words were, that will be the red herring we need to dupe the public into thinking it's a medicine. This whole thing is a joke. We've known this since 77, I mean, 1996. We've known what marijuana is. We've known what THC is. And our predictions have come true. In my 40 years following this issue, I live in Sacramento, which is right next to UC Davis. And it was my privilege to get to know Dr. Ethel Sassenrath, who was one of the early researchers looking at marijuana and the effect of THC, then again, 2%, on the rhesus monkeys population. And I ended up calling a press conference, actually well attended, because a writer, Peggy Mann, you can Google her, very well known and actually acknowledged by Congress for her writing way back 40 years ago on marijuana. But Peggy Mann was coming to discuss and to observe what Ethel Sassenrath, Dr. Sassenrath, was seeing in the primate colony. And I had a whole bunch of people from Sacramento Press. And with my own eyes, I saw the difference in the control group of the monkeys when mothers had received their low doses of THC. And the mothers were not only laid back, but the babies were laid back. They weren't running around picking fleas like the study group. So I saw with my own eyes long ago what now people are beginning to talk about, and they're looking at the impact of THC not only on the developing fetuses, but on the newborn, and of great concern, and again documented by Ethel Sassenrath, it's generational. So skipping generations, we're seeing problems with developing brains. So I'd like to at least have your comments on that, and I would at least like your readers, your listeners, to know that these studies were done years ago, and everything that was being published then is true today. And then again, remembering today, the THC, which is the evil component of cannabis sativa, is the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is so much stronger.
Okay. Thank you, Carla, for that. And you know what? I am not going to disagree or debate the fact that we want to keep this out of the hands of children and women who are pregnant or lactating. Right now, we don't have enough science. You saw the rhesus monkeys. I think that's a good case, but I think the fact that a lot of women who are experiencing morning sickness, you know, unfortunately, for lack of better products that are out there, some might be teratogenic to their unborn child, are going to cannabis. And whether that's right or wrong, they're getting relief. Now, these babies, are they being born with deficits or are lower birth weights? That could be debated. And this is something that I think we just need to turn over to science and to do the studies. And in order to do the studies, we need to get this off of Schedule 1. This drug needs to be off of Schedule 1 in order to do the science. You had mentioned Alex Berenstein, and he wrote that book, Tell Your Children.
Tell Your Children.
Right. Psychosis and Violence. There was a recent debate, and this was in the London Free Press, where Dr. Peter Grinspoon, who's a Harvard professor.
Oh, I know him. I debated him many years ago. I know him.
Well, but here again, we got a situation where the press and people that saw this debate have come up with the title, Alex Berenstein Gets Smoked by Dr. Peter Grinspoon in a Debate on Cannabis and Mental Health. So you know what? I mean, you can laugh, I could laugh, but we really don't know. And I think Alex Berenstein, he's a fiction writer. He's not in the medical profession. And his book has been basically debunked by the entire medical community. So I don't want to really have a debate about that. That's just a fact.
And again, you mentioned it needs to be taken off Schedule 1. So for research, there have been 35,000 studies done on marijuana, and I haven't heard, if people are willing to follow protocol. I have not heard that people have had a problem getting money for research on marijuana. And again, as I said at the very beginning of this wonderful opportunity to talk with you gentlemen, our daughter is a med-ped. She's a pediatrician and an internist. Currently, as you know, her license hangs in balance based on FDA approval of drugs. She would never be able, and no one in Illinois nor California, no doctor can prescribe cannabis for, quote, medical reasons. They can only recommend. That you cannot prescribe something that's illegal, controlled substance, Schedule 1 drug. That's a fact. So again, I rest my case. And as soon as FDA, as they have approved Epidiolex, which is the one drug that can't, one cannabis substance that can be prescribed for certain rare cases of epilepsy, when Marinol has been available, there's hope, I think, in more drugs possibly being isolated and identified. And when those are made available for my daughter to prescribe, I will certainly say amen, again, resting my case. But until then, we don't have the media on our side. You all know we don't have George Soros funding. I know about money and the marijuana industry. I live in Sacramento. I've been around 40, almost 5 years in this issue, and I know what we're fighting, folks. And I frankly, I think I have a problem when I know that pharmacies are selling openly. They should be telling people about CBD. They should be telling them that CBD cannot be marketed in a food or a food product. They should be telling them that research is really just being done on the oils that are being promoted for CBD and the veterinary products that are being promoted. Our best friends, two of our best friends are pharmacists. I go to them for accurate scientific information that I can believe. And I'm troubled when pharmacists are promoting and selling, quote, medical marijuana products. That bothers me. And I'm very honest with you. So I will keep fighting, trying to get the information out. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to talk with people and to make people aware. In particular, you know, if people sitting around in a care home, and I have parents who ended up in a care home, you know, if people sitting around smoking a joint gives them some pleasure, you know, so be it. But do I want my truck driver, my bus driver, my pilot, anybody on the highway smoking weed? No way. Eating edibles at parties and animals, even getting crumbs of my daughter, who's a doctor. Her dog almost died, and they figured out it came from some chocolate edibles with the THC in it. I mean, we got to tell people the truth about this, and it's not scare tactics.
I understand what you're saying, Carla, but you know, at the same time, you know, I've got a study or a article in front of me about THC possibly helping to prevent transplant rejections. And so, you know, this is on the medical side, and this is where, you know, getting cannabis off of Schedule One would be good. But, you know, the biggest problem with organ transplant is rejection. And you've got some drugs that are out there, mycophenolate and Imuran and cyclosporin, that have a lot of bad side effects. And, you know, it's the long term, after a month that that patient has that new organ, that the T cells and the B cells that are part of immunity, when these laboratory rodents were given THC, that rejection didn't happen as dramatically
and as so quickly. And that will be a miracle. That will be a miracle. But I've not heard from any of the scientists, other than those who are promoting pot, that there's not, and again, you should talk to Dr. Osoli at the University of Mississippi. I don't know if you know of his name, and as far as I know, I've not spoken with him for years, but I've not heard that there's not research being done in these areas. I've not heard that this is really, you know, a justifiable reason for removing marijuana from a Schedule One. I sat through a hearing here in Sacramento, the last hearing last year, when the judge declared again that marijuana would remain a Schedule One controlled substance.
Okay. Well, I think let's just move on to some of the other points in the brochure.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Drug driving. Your brochure, you talk about driving tests showing marijuana impairs reaction times, divided attention tasks, things like that. You know, one of every eight traffic fatalities in Colorado are marijuana related. Now, one thing that was interesting was I actually had a debate with someone like you, Carla, last year in a temple. And, you know, he brought up these facts. And what was interesting about that debate was, even before we started talking, the woman who put this together was handing out a brochure, a one-page brochure about, in California, a young man with pot in his system hit a car that killed a mother and a child. And, you know, and that sort of poisoned what I felt was the whole debate, because there was no information really about that young man. You know, the fact that they found cannabis in his system, that could have been from a week ago. He was, you know, so anyways, it's just the whole idea that, you know, one out of every eight traffic fatalities in Colorado are marijuana related, a 32% interest. Increase.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's the idea that yes, there could be cannabis in someone's system, but there could be other drugs. There could be driving.
Right.
There could be, you know, other things.
Right.
And I think we can't just go ahead and say that this is because of someone driving high.
Right. You know, I hear you. And, you know, I think we'd probably at least be able to say it exacerbates any problem that might be there. However, an interesting study that I did follow was the air pilot, the the pilot, a well-trained pilot who did the study smoking a joint, and that was way back 40 years ago because I used that in my testimony in one of the bills I was working on, who could, and this pilot, well-trained pilot, it could have been my brother-in-law, he couldn't land the plane without error after smoking a joint. So nobody is going to deny that that THC does impact driving skills. I don't think anybody will deny that. Now, is it the cause? Is it the only cause for the accident? I don't know. And I don't know that anybody does. But we have to at least give the public the benefit of the facts. And they're going to make a decision
based on
what we tell them.
I agree. And in running a dispensary, I always caution patients that we're leaving, don't do this and drive. We always want to be very careful and cautionary, especially for seniors.
I know you're a pharmacist. Are you also, are people asking you about moon picks?
I'm not familiar with what moon picks are.
Well, I'm old enough to remember long ago when I was a kid, and I'm 82, cinnamon sticks. We'd suck on cinnamon sticks, toothpicks that were saturated with cinnamon oil. And I don't even know why they finally were outlawed, but I know we always tried to smuggle them into elementary and junior high school. Now a moon pick is being advertised in an Arizona medical marijuana dispensary. When using a moon pick, your entire body will feel the effects. Uptake of our 90% plus distillates will occur sublingually through all four areas of the mucous lining. The oral cavity, cheeks, tongue, and lips are activated and allow the cannabinoids to immediately enter the bloodstream through the vessel-rich tissues, creating the fastest and most efficient onset.
Well, that's interesting, and I can only imagine that this moon stick is a rubofacient, which means it's a counter-irritant, and anything that irritates mucous membranes will open up, the additional absorption and of whatever the cannabis that they're talking about. So this is a topic that I'm not familiar with, but at the same time, I do understand what this is about.
Yeah, check it out, because as pharmacists, you all need to be aware, because this is the kind of stuff kids can do. Nobody will ever know. They're sucking on a silly toothpick, getting a load of THC. I think it's extremely scary.
Okay. Well, I'm on the other side of your brochure. I think, want to talk about some of these other things. Physical health impacts, the lungs, smoke from marijuana contains 4 to 5 times the toxins, irritants, and carcinogens. So, I don't disagree with that, but at the same time, this is a plant that has been smoked and consumed for thousands of years. If someone comes in with an upper respiratory tract disease or asthma, I'm always going to say, hey, not a good idea to smoke this. There's vaporization. Now, at the same time, vaporization is coming under fire because of the illicit market coming out with products that...
Vaping. Vaping.
But at the same time, the vaping industry, the legal industry, these issues are not coming from the legal industry, only the illegal industry. And I think that's one key thing that we need to discuss is the...
Okay, let's discuss that. I'm so glad you brought that up because I wrote that down on a piece of paper. Go ahead.
Okay, well, if we talk about the illegal industry, it's not regulated, it's not taxed, nothing is lab tested. And, someone who works in the illegal industry doesn't have any problem selling marijuana to a 12-year-old. So I think, the idea here with the legal industry is to shut down the illegal industry, but that's never going to happen as long as we have a federal government that continues to, highly tax this industry. Mike Crapo, who's the head of the Senate Banking
Division. Banking Committee, I know definitely. I know who he is.
He's blocking the Safe Banking Act and wants to add... Right. An additional 2% tax. Now, what that is going to effectively do is keep the legal industry prices so high that people that want to get this and pay, you know, less for it are going to go to the illegal industry, which is wrought with, you know, issues and vaping issues and other issues, and who knows what the product will be laced with. And so, you know, I think it's the federal government and the high amount, you know, 280E, which is the taxes and things that are happening for the legal industry, which is really one of the biggest issues to shut down the illegal industry.
Right. I'd like to respond to that. Number one, no amount of taxing or regulating is going to change the composition of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC. Nothing is going to change that. And that's, again, coming back, that's our concern and what it's doing to the developing brains and all of the negative spin-offs. That's point number one. Point number two, in California, you know, the promotion, the $33 million that beat our little paltry whatever we earned to fight Prop 64, the $33 million George Soros and all his other minions funding these movements in states, they're promoting, marketing these propositions as we're going to bring in so much money to our communities. We're going to solve all your problems. Well, the bottom line, number one, and California, recent California data verifies that the taxes are simply nowhere near what they were hoped to be, nowhere near it. Of course, why is anybody going to go to your pharmacy, Joe, when they can go down the street and buy their weed from a kid? The black market is alive and well. California is a major cartel. The black market will never be removed in California. I live in Northern California. The growers that are demolishing our pristine forests and killing wildlife and using chemicals, highly potent chemicals that are getting in our water. This industry is not going to go away if we regulate it and tax it. That's a joke. It's a joke. And they're even in California now, there's a move to lower the tax rate because to make it easier for the pot shops to survive, because they're not doing the business that they had hoped to do, even though it's a $55 billion business. But it's out of control, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I understand what you're saying. And, you know, I think I want to disagree with the fact that if we can lower the price of the legal market, I think things will improve. Think about, you know, one of the things in your brochure is marijuana is not earth friendly. Well, you know, that is the illegal market. You know, the legal market there's no dumping of pesticides. Have you ever been to a legal cannabis farm?
Yes, I there are legal cannabis farms all over Sacramento. Okay. Yes, and I've been in a number of the big major pot shops in California, in Sacramento, and I have their brochures. And you were talking about, I think earlier I wanted to make a point, you buy your weed based on the THC concentration. I think I heard one of you say something about that the THC isn't the critical issue, but it is. I mean, that's what you pay. That's what the big bucks go to. You buy the good weed or the good edibles. And yes, the grows that are taking over, the beautiful the flowers that are grown along the Half Moon Bay and south of San Francisco, those huge farms that grew flowers that were sent all across the country are now being taken over by growers, and it's putting workers out of work. A lot of legal folks from Mexico are just crying because they no longer have a job because the pot growers have come in and they don't want to work growing something illegal. They're afraid they'll never be able to keep their visas that they have, to their work visas. So yes, the legal pot grows, pristine environment, I don't deny that they are out and about, but that's not most of California.
Well, one of the things, and I wanted to mention this at the beginning of our interview, was I think California is an exception. A lot of the other states that have legal cannabis programs use greenhouses. They use, they're not really outside. And so, in 60 Minutes, just about a month ago, actually interviewed a grower who, went legal, but he said he couldn't pay for anything because of all the taxes and the fees. And so he went illegal. And one of the issues with that is as soon as he was shut down, another 1,000 plants were planted because the police just couldn't keep up with it, and they don't keep up with it. So California, I think, is an exception. I think, Carla, it might be a good idea to kind of look at what's happening in the rest of the country, because like we had a conversation in the past about how you could take a walk on Venice Beach and within 2 minutes get a medical cannabis card when it was a medical program, and then buy your cannabis right next door. And that has never been the case in any other state.
Well, that'll be interesting to see if, as more states get into this, if they end up having, like the Dr. Skype I told you about, when you could go in and a minute later you walk out with your medical, quote, marijuana card, when you haven't even seen a doctor. You know, the whole thing is such a joke. And maybe California is the only state, but I doubt it, because what we're reading in Colorado and Washington, we have people on our Monday night national calls and the stories that people are telling us what's going on in their own local communities and the grows that are encroaching on farm, where people have been planting corn, for instance, in Iowa. I would talk to somebody just the other day, and the illegal grows are everywhere, encroaching on the legal grows. And down the valley of California, my family are all farmers from many generations back, and it's huge money is the bottom line. How can anybody deny that? And of course, I understand. I get marketing blurbs on my computer all through the day. This is the industry to be in. Well, maybe to make money, but not to be concerned about the future of our country. I'm a former teacher. A third of our kids nationally, roughly speaking, are not graduating. Does that concern anybody? Are those kids who are dropping out of school paying taxes and getting good jobs? I doubt it. We're hearing from people who can't find kids who can pass a drug test, for Pete's sakes. Speaking of Pete's, one of the big coffee shops in Sacramento, it's a problem, and we just have to acknowledge it. And yes, you're saying you would agree that kids shouldn't be smoking weed, but that's never going to happen. That they're going to be, if they're getting moon sticks now, good grief, what's next?
Well, that's something interesting. I wasn't aware of that, but in your brochure, there's just I think we talked about this at the beginning. Crime goes up. Real estate values go down. I've got a paper in front of me that says just the opposite, that crime goes down, teen use goes down, real estate values go up where there's a legal dispensary. So, we can go ahead and debate this until we're blue in the face, but really somewhere in the middle lies the truth on all of this. And, I think the idea, one of the other pieces in your brochure is marijuana really medicine. I think that should be taken out because, as a pharmacist running a dispensary for 3+ years in Illinois, I see people throwing away their canes. I see children who were seizing several times a day become seizure free. And we talked about the idea of, FDA approved drugs like Epidiolex and Marinol. Marinol is synthetic THC. It's got two indications for dyslexia, and also for
nobody's using it. Our daughter is certainly not using Marinol. There are other better anti-nausea. I'm just pointing out that there are a couple cannabis sativa products that are legal. They have passed the test, and so I think, again, coming back to where I started from, once FDA approves, a product, so be it.
Well, we look at the FDA, and they're very slow, and of course, the Schedule One issue prevents a lot of pharmaceutical companies from getting into this. And I take a look at Epidiolex. One of my pharmacy students who graduated and did a residency in Washington in pediatrics was the single study site for Epidiolex before it was approved by the FDA. And it's a rather very oily, very loose kind of difficult to dose. There is a synthetic aspect to Epidiolex, to get consistency batch after batch. So that takes out some of the other cannabinoids and flavonoids and terpenes. And I've had parents actually say, it's very expensive. It's $32,500 a year. The PBM industry doesn't necessarily cover it. There's a step system for approvals, and they have to try all these other drugs first. So a lot of these parents are actually saying, my kid, needs more than just CBD to control seizures. He needs some amount of THC. And you have to be very careful with that. But it is a fact that CBD combined with a low amount of THC can help these kids that are seizing and can improve their quality of life.
I think, there's always potential. And I have two friends who have kids who have epilepsy, who have seizures or who have had seizures. All you do is pray that eventually, as I said in the very beginning of our discussion, this is a highly complex drug, cannabis sativa, and there's potential. Nobody's denying that. But currently, the American Medical Association, the American Cancer Society, the American Epilepsy Society, Pediatrics, the Eye Institute, the Lung Association, they all oppose, quote, medical marijuana at this point. So all I'm doing is I rest my case again on the law. That's the best I can do. And to try to give the facts that we can verify to the public, and then people are going to have to make their own decisions and then live with the consequences.
Well, I thank you for your time today. I think this is definitely a controversial issue. I think the fact, there's two major things that we talked about here. What I'm hearing from your side is that THC is evil. I believe that in large quantities, you're right, but I think for the amount that would help a patient or the amount that would be used recreationally, in moderation, think about alcohol.
Who's going to decide that? Who's going to decide that? You can't even find two. That's another issue. How can you decide what's a safe level of THC to you, as you were saying? What's moderation? Who's going to decide that? It's not like a blood alcohol, test that's absolute. You can't even find, this is why packaging, you're a pharmacist. I have two bottles of medicine in front of me. It has dosing, it has side effects, it has all this information for the consumer. Who's going to determine all of this?
Well, one of the there's a doctor that wrote a book called Stone, David Casserette. He also has a TED Med presentation in 12 minutes. And at the beginning, he gets up on the stage and he says the most embarrassing moment in his career was when one of his patients, an elderly lady that had cancer, said, "Doctor, do you believe there's any benefit to marijuana?" To which the doctor responded, "Well, based on what I learned in medical school, and what I know today, no, I don't believe there's a benefit." To which this patient handed him a portfolio with several studies and said, "Doctor, I think you ought to take a look at this." And then she went on to say, "I'm 70-something years old. It's amazing it's taking me this long to find this marvelous drug." And so Casserette went on to do his own research and wrote a book. Now, the point here is that a lot of people, and this is what I experience running a dispensary, we give them an amount of cannabis, we give them instruction, we give them the cautions, we understand their condition, the drugs that they're taking, any drug interactions, and then what they do is they find what is the therapeutic or sweet spot, the dose that helps them. Now, on the recreational side, again, you know, there is a black market out there. And I think, you know, and we talked about this, we can debate this until, you know, for hours. The only way to shut down this black market is to allow the legal market to not have to pay such high taxes and you know, and to be able to compete with the black market so people aren't going to, you know, the black market for this product, because I think that's what's ruining, and that's what your brochure is all about. It's about black market cannabis and the problems that are coming from that.
But again, I come back to my opening statement. No amount of regulating or taxing or laws one way or the other is going to change the composition of THC. That's a fact.
So Joe and Carla, I've really enjoyed listening to this discussion. I also think there's the element of administration, and that is how a patient in the hands of a physician and pharmacist teaming up would take in the cannabis and for what need. Carla made a comment about, you know, the research, and Joe also commented about the research needing to be federally supported per se. I agree with that. I agree with both of you. I think that administration as well as dosing, Carla, whoever comes up with the first medical cannabis dosing calculator based on your genetic makeup, which can be found by pharmacogenomics, that's the study of how a medication, the efficacy of a medication is different in your body than it is in my body, is different than Joe, and how you absorb something, how you metabolize. So once we have that data, which is all data-driven, we know the age of the patient, we know the sex of the patient, we know some other medical classifications of the patient. This application, which will come to be, it will become a factual usage tool that a physician and a pharmacist team could literally give the exact dosing based on the specific administration. Is that administration vaping? Is that administration digestion? Is that administration an injection? There's even new technology, Carla, that's coming out where you put a substance in a pill, in a capsule. You swallow that, and your stomach acid starts to charge the device, which is a microscopic microchip, mm-hmm. and it starts to talk to your iPhone in telling you what's actually happening with digestion of that medication. So I think once we come up with some of that stuff, I think mm-hmm. cannabis, THC, and CBD, and of course the levels of THC versus the levels of CBD in the hands of a physician, research, and pharmacist team are going to be amazing. I don't like it in the hands of recreational, because I think as soon as you say that something is recreational, then everybody thinks that, well, you know, let's run amok and let's do whatever, because obviously maybe it's safe. And that airplane pilot and that taxi driver and that construction worker shouldn't be on many legalized medications that are available, even over-the-counter medications. There are certain mm-hmm. Medications that an airplane pilot shouldn't be on. So I think there's much to this. I think the focal point of what we're trying to do with the medical podcast publication and what Joe's doing is bring this to the hands of medical professionals. And as you know, Carla, with your family members, if it's in the hand of the medical profession, I think it's going to do much more for society than just being run amok recreational.
I think that's true. There's always great hope in that. California and the other states that have allowed, quote, pot for fun, even though medical marijuana is pot for fun too in most cases. You know, we can grow six plants or 16 or 26 in my own home. So why is somebody even going to go to a pharmacy when they can grow their own? The black market is not going to go away. It's getting bigger by the day. And I think that's the biggest fight that the Pharmaceutical Association is going to have to fight. And I when you mentioned how a different body, you know, will handle a different drug, I'm highly allergic to aspirin and all anti-inflammatory drugs. So I can just visualize this little chip in my system, and I am given some THC, and it'd be interesting to see how my body would respond, but I'm not going to try it. So I think the points we've made today are interesting. Again, it's the kids that we're looking at. The black market is not going to go away. I think that's in a world of Pollyanna. And I, of course, I live in a state which is pretty far removed from Pollyanna. Even this new year, when we hope to have clear vision 2020, and I would hope we'd all have a thankful heart as we go forward daily, making wise decisions and then being willing to live with the consequences.
And you know, Carla, I really appreciate your input, and Todd, your comments as well. And you know, one thing, being from Illinois, this is day two of a recreational market. Now,
right.
What's going to be interesting about Illinois is to see just how this turns out. I'm here. I'm at the ground level of this industry, and I'm going to be taking a hard look at just what happens from all the things that are in your brochure, Carla, that talk about the increase in crime, decrease in property values, you know, increased hospitalizations, things like that. So, you know, I think California didn't necessarily do it right. Before I got into this industry, I went to Colorado, I went to California, visited, talked to people, and I realized, no, that's not the way Illinois should do this. And so mm-hmm. I want to look at Illinois as sort of the poster child for the entire nation from both a medical and an adult use market to see how well this can go when it's regulated.
It'll be interesting to follow the data. And again, if any of your people, your listeners, are interested in having some copies of this well-documented infographic that we put together that is pretty easy to read. And I'm certainly grateful to the one lady who spoke up and questioned THC's impact on the immune system. And having had a nephew who died of AIDS, I remember 20 years ago when he spent the last year of his life telling people to lay off the weed, that it was just making his system more vulnerable. To being an AIDS patient, it was already immune compromised. So I'm grateful for the lady who happened to have one of our brochures, who was the link between you folks and me and our discussion today.
Right. And I think I don't disagree, but I think, you know, when our immune system goes into action, it's going into action against foreign bodies and inflammation. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where cannabis has that effect on the immune system to enhance that. It doesn't mm-hmm. enhance a breakdown of your immune system, protecting your own body. And that's where we discuss the organ rejection mm-hmm. situation that hopefully is going to show promise for these patients.
If people are interested, they can go to our website, aalm.info, and we have all of our information there, and facts and figures are documented, and how people can find out more about us and can help us if they're interested in our efforts to educate America.
Very good. And I'd also like to say, you know, people can, you know, go to Illinois Normal and NORML, you know, to look at the facts from the side of the coin that is sort of debunking and looking at everything that is in, you know, the AAML brochure. Again, you know, this is a debate. It's not a definitive on one side or the other.
Right.
And I think over time we're going to learn what the truth is. Well, what happens, Carla, if the FDA, you know, does what I expect them to do at some point, tomorrow, says, okay, we're taking cannabis, marijuana off of Schedule 1, we're descheduling it. What happens then?
Are you asking me what happens?
Yeah. What do you think happens?
Then when it's not illegal, you know, again, I said I rest my case on the law. And once the FDA says that this stuff is fine, then that's, you know, I sponsored 12 pieces of legislation that are state law in California. So I live by the law. And if we don't like the law, we can work hard to change it. And interestingly enough, in California, 80% of the communities up and down the state have banned pot shops. I live in Sacramento County. There are 7 cities in our county. 6 of the 7 do not have pot shops. Drug dens, lots of us are calling them. They didn't want it. They didn't want the hassle. They didn't want the population that frequents the pot shops. And we are saying, no way, Jose. And people are standing up and fighting back. They're fighting to keep the growers out. They're fighting against huge money from the industry. And we're just plain old citizens who care about kids and the future of our country.
Thank you, Carla. This has been a very interesting and engaging conversation. Todd, thanks for moderating.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can do part 2 of this at some point down the road.
Yes.
And have a blessed New Year.
Thank you both. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Bye now.
So we had a great discussion with Joe and Carla. Thank you so much, both of you, for participating on the Medical Podcast. We will have some links in the show notes to reach back out to Joseph Friedman, who really is our go-to expert on the subject of medical cannabis and its ability to help patients the right way and in the hands of a physician pharmacist teams. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, we're easily accessible here at the Pharmacy Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram with the same handle, @PharmacyPodcast. And if you want to reach out to us through email, please go and send us an email to publisher@pharmacypodcast.com. And we'll have show notes, as I said, with contact information for Joe Friedman. Thank you so much for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to the Medical Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please help us by sharing the show on your LinkedIn, Twitter, and other social media networks. If you have healthcare-oriented questions or are a pharmacist or healthcare professional and want to learn more about medical cannabis, please reach out to our team by email. Send your message to medicalpodcast@gmail.com. The Medical Podcast should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing standard of care or as a basis for expert witness testimony. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on the podcast. Seek all medical advice and or treatment from a certified, registered, licensed physician and or pharmacist. This is not legal advice. Seek out a knowledgeable lawyer about the subject. The Medical Podcast is for general information purposes to generate meaningful conversations about medical marijuana and is not an authority on the subject from a clinical or legal perspective. We'll be right back.